ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, ¡golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Wednesday, October 31st, 2018, as Halloween. I'm Kevin, the sheriff of the soccer podcast world, Larame, joined as always by Dwayne, the outlaw of the soccer podcast world, Rollins. Dwayne, how you doing?
Pew, pew, pew. Oh, no, wait. Bang, bang, bang. Pew, pew, pew. That's more Star Wars. That's for May the 4th. All right. We're good. Happy Halloween.
It is Halloween. Hopefully everyone's safe and have a good time tonight. I'm looking forward to some candies. Dwayne, I just arrived back from the Montreal Impact End of the Year Players press conference. Well, it was a press conference where Nacho Piatti was awarded the Most Valuable Player, the Outstanding Player Award for the 2018 season for Montreal, and Evan Bush received the Defensive Player of the Year for the Montreal Impact. But before we start talking about the players that I've talked to in the dressing room as well, it's going to be interesting to talk about Anthony Jackson, I have to tell you that. Vancouver yesterday had a, well, let's just say it was an entertaining afternoon watching my Twitter feed with Vancouver players throwing each other under the bus.
Yeah, I've taken to calling it the Real Footballers of Vancouver, playing words of the Real House. Yeah, it had some reality TV drama going on yesterday. It was one player would come out and say the problem was everyone else didn't have a direction. Danielle, let's try that for the fourth time. Danielle Henry said, this team just didn't play for each other. Kendall Watson said, I want to leave. Bob Lenduzzi comes on and said, he's not leaving unless we get full market for him. And the problem this year was the dressing room was clearly divided, and that should have been dealt with earlier, which is that boom, boom, boom sound you heard was Carl Robinson getting run over again at that point. So, yeah, it was drama.
Drama in Vancouver. I guess Alphonso Davies was the glue to hold the team all together. Now he's gone. The team has fallen apart. This team is going to have a lot of roster movement in the offseason. And even Stefan Marinovic, which is funny because just in September or August, the 18th of August, he tweeted, I've never seen a locker room this united and this ready to face adversity. And yesterday he tweeted, I've never seen a locker room so full of cliques. Yeah, I guess. Which one is it?
Yeah, exactly. I was just thinking the Alphonso Davies things. It's so often that, you know, the marriage holds together until the kids go away to college. You know, that's
or yeah, exactly. Once you retire and you're stuck with your partner forever, every single day, more than often, you don't have the workspace to be your safe space. Sometimes marriages go not the right way. So I guess Alphonso Davies was the kid leaving home, and now the parents are fighting.
Yeah, well, look, there's so much to unpack with this, and we have Simon Fudge booked for Friday to talk about it from an inside Vancouver perspective. But from an outside perspective, it was pure comedy, right? If you're not a Whitecaps fan, I don't mean to be disrespectful if you are, but I mean, even Whitecaps fans were kind of just shaking their head and laughing by the end of the day, right? It was just absurd. I've seen some crazy stuff at the end of seasons at Locker Day before. I've seen, like I was around TFC during the wackiest of wacky times when, you know, I was about to say who was their main role model. I'll still protect that a little bit. But if you know who I'm talking about, you know who I'm talking about. You know, the players would say something and then someone would pull you aside and go, well, this is what's really happening. And someone else would pull you aside and go, well, this is what's really happening. And that was kind of what was going on yesterday in Vancouver. The click thing, that's probably where that was coming from, that disconnect, because he was probably united in his guys, but he wasn't really looking beyond, the other corner of the dressing room where they're just all fighting with each other. And as things start to go wrong, then no one has that spirit anymore. And what we were saying all year, there was just something wrong with them. And I think it was coming out what was wrong yesterday.
Yeah, it wasn't just Robbo, which I guess was part of it, too. If your locker room is full of cliques and you're not in a position to make an environment to get those cliques to work together, it's, I guess, one of the responsibility of a manager or captain on that team or the leaders in that team. So I guess I don't just blame Carl Robinson. I do blame the leaders in this team. And I guess this team was lacking a lot of leadership. The classic meaning of leadership, like the locker room leadership, not necessarily on the field. And, you know, it's kind of weird that a player like Kai Kamara comes in. Kai Kamara has been known to be part of locker rooms that are not necessarily agreeing with each other. And again, it's happening. Kai Kamara in Vancouver. And this situation arises. It happened famously in a game versus Montreal, where it was 4-1 Columbus. Federico Higuain and Kai Kamara getting almost to a blow. To a blowout and to a fight on the middle of the pitch. Then they tied that game 4-4, and 2 weeks later, Kai Kamara was gone. And yeah, so you do see this happening more often than not in locker rooms where Kai Kamara is involved in.
Yeah, when Jason Davis, U.S. United States of Soccer host, a longtime person that people are familiar with, said that very thing on Twitter yesterday too. So immediately when this came out, oh, go figure, a locker room is divided with Kai Kamara in it. So that jumps out. You know, when I hear this clique thing, what I really think of is that roster is composed in such a way that cliques are easy to materialize, because they really just have obvious groups. You have your Americans on one corner, you have your Canadians in another corner, you have your Hispanic people in the other corner. That's what I imagine it was. And you need someone in the middle that can unite those groups if you're going to be successful, right? And I'm not, you know, I don't want to paint things in that kind of brush universally, but there's a natural assumption that you can sort of draw from that, and it's really important in any locker room anywhere in the world now in sports, where you have people coming from different places and different parts of the world where they're naturally gravitate to each other, to make sure that you become one team rather than many, because many is never going to win the battle, because it's just not. And we saw it yesterday. Look, yeah, they need to rebuild this thing from the bottom up. They have a lot of money from Davies. I mean, Kendall Watson saying that he wants to leave, and then Bobby Lenarduzzi saying he's not going to leave unless he gets full market for him. I mean, that's just – that speaks to two things, Kevin. I'll let you jump in after this. At first, it's stupid. You got a player who doesn't want to be there, you get rid of him. Yes, Jermaine Defoe is the exact example I will give you from Toronto, right? Jermaine Defoe was clearly talented, clearly played well for TFC. I think people forget that. He had 14 or 15 goals. I forget which. He was scoring. So it wasn't like they were just going, you know, okay, he underperformed, let's get rid of him. They had to replace Scholes, and they had to replace a significant player, a player that was played a greater role than Kendall Watson, with a gun to their head. And they did that because they knew that they had to. They're the same situation with Watson, and he's a much less talented player, though, than Jermaine Defoe was. So it shouldn't be that an issue. But the bigger issue here is Bobby. Bobby didn't take any responsibility, from what I heard yesterday. It was either Carl Robinson not uniting the worlds. He didn't use the name Carl Robinson, but he was clearly talking about the ex-manager, or yeah, the players weren't taking responsibility. But where was the responsibility taken by Bobby?
Yeah, it's true. And if you listen to the fans of Vancouver, there are a lot of fans now pointing the finger at that direction of the upper management of the Vancouver Whitecaps. It all starts from the top. If you're not unified at the top, how do you want to be unified on the sidelines and on the pitch? And I guess everyone needs to take responsibility for what happened, especially for what happened yesterday. It's one thing to miss the playoffs, and we've got to talk about Montreal in a few minutes, where the locker room, a lot of people were still disappointed, but no one threw anyone under the bus outside of maybe Anthony Jackson and Mel throwing the management under the bus, with still shouldering some of the blame. But yeah. So when you look at Vancouver, the first part of fixing a problem is realizing there is one. And if you're not ready to shoulder responsibility, I guess that makes you part of the problem.
Look, and the Bobby question is something that looms large over this team, period, end of story. And it has been for a while now, but it's getting increasingly louder. The screams that maybe it's time for a different direction at the president's office. He looms, his shadow is massive in Vancouver, in that soccer community, in the sports community. I mean, you look at across sports platforms. I asked Simon Fudge this earlier this year, and he compared him to, you know, Trevor Linden for the Canucks, or the place kicker, Eli something or other for the BC Lions. Forgive me, I'm not big on place kicker names, but the guy that played for the BC Lions for like 20 years, right?
So Lou Pasaglia.
There you go. Eli Manning, I guess, maybe.
No,
I
was going to Lou Pasaglia. I always remember this because his last game, his last play as a player, they put him in a quarterback sneak, and he actually scored a touchdown, his first touchdown of his entire career. He's a kicker, so he never actually usually touches the ball. But yeah, Lou Pasaglia was the kicker for the BC Lions.
Yeah, the Bobby Lenarduzzi's name's right up there, especially if you're in the older generation. And for any listeners that are new to the sport in Canada or are from Canada or aren't familiar with what Bobby's role is, I mean, this is a guy that goes back to the NASL original days. It was part of the Whitecaps Soccer Bowl Championship, which was in 1979, I want to say. This is a guy that played for Reading when no Canadians had went over there and were successful and was trained in Canada, from Canada, coached the Canadian national team back when the Canadian national team was actually in the Hacks. He was the last manager of the Canadian national team that coached in the Hacks. Didn't quite get them to a World Cup, but he would have got them to a World Cup if it was a 32-team format. He was 89? Finished high enough in CONCACAF, right?
Was it not in 89, I believe? The last time
the last, the last, it was 94 was the last World Cup that was in Canada, was second in CONCACAF that year. So obviously the USA had the direct berth, and there was only one berth from CONCACAF back then. We're getting into ancient history now, but Canada did finish second in that group and almost nudged Mexico out for the berth. So, he was a good manager at one point. He was a legendary manager for the Vancouver 86ers. That won several Canadian Soccer League championships is probably, amongst the hardcore geeks of Canadian soccer, the 86ers are that one team from the Canadian Soccer League years that still is kind of iconic in people's minds. They were that good back then. So this is a guy that has a huge history and a huge shadow, but, sometimes the shadow looms large. The other day, that he's coming out the other side of the python now, right? Like all but his head's showing now. It's almost his time is done.
Well, there's the expression that the shadow looms large, right? The shadow overtakes a lot of precedence, and it's unfortunate that it comes to this. So we'll see the ramification for the Vancouver Whitecaps. We expect a big roster overhaul, and we expect a coach to be named in the next few months. Mark Dos Santos is a name that's been named a lot. And if I'm Mark Dos Santos, I'm not getting anywhere close to Vancouver. I'm saying no. I'm going to get another shot. It may be another opportunity where I'm more in a winning situation in my year one than going to Vancouver and literally starting a team from pretty much ashes.
I mean, it's kind of one of those famous gifs out there it's a little toddler that's kind of running all with a big smile on their face, and then they see something that startles them, and they stop dead and frown and turn and run the other way. Someone posted that with a live shot of Mark Dos Santos looking at Vancouver. So, if you can imagine that meme, I can't believe we're in an era where we have famous memes that we describe on radio-like formats.
Poor kids.
That's 2018 in a nutshell right there. But nonetheless, that's exactly perfectly illustrated what he must be thinking right now. It's how do you attract anyone to that mess? I mean, unless you go, okay, clearly there's no excuse anymore. There's no, it's obvious that this is toxic and we need to blow it up. And that might be appealing to someone like Mark Dos Santos that, okay, well, you see this, right? You see that we can't work in this environment, so we can toss 18 of these guys out the window right now. Not literally, I'm not suggesting that, but we can toss, the
contracts,
a whole bunch of them.
Let's toss the contracts out the window. But no, and the only way they could literally, I think, convince Mark Dos Santos, if he doesn't have an offer from another league, another team in this league, is, okay, Mark, you can release pretty much any player that you want, that you can contractually. The ones you want to get rid of, we might be able to help you out. And you got about $15 million to work with. That might be enticing. But knowing Vancouver, will they give that amount of money to spend? That's the other question. And, we'll see what happens in Vancouver.
We'll end it with this because we don't want to dwell too much on the teams that are out. We already talked about Vancouver at length, and we are going to again on Friday, and we're going to talk about Montreal a little bit before we get into tonight's games again in the show. So we'll leave it at this, but I'll ask this to any Vancouver fan listening out there. Would you be willing to have a year in which there is something being built, almost like the Impact's year this year, where there's not a lot of hope going in, where you've stripped it down a little bit, where you're starting from scratch with new management, and maybe there's a learning curve that makes the playoffs highly unlikely or, an upset if it happens next year? Would you be willing to go into a year like that with the understanding that you're building towards a long-term goal? Or do you want to just continue on the path that they seem to be on now? It didn't work this year, where they're good enough to be competitive each year, but don't really seem to have a plan to become a championship team. What do you prefer? I mean, I'm being biased in the way I ask that, because I think that it's obvious that you should want to be building towards a championship, but maybe you don't. Maybe you do think finishing third, fourth most years is what you want to do, because you might, roll the lucky Snake Eyes in the playoffs one year and get that title anyway. So I don't know. I'll ask you, Vancouver fans, to think on that over the next few days, next few months, because we're all in this country in MLS circles going to have a lot of months to think about a lot of things.
Yep, exactly. And speaking of having a few months to talk about things, Montreal Impact had today the players' end of the year press conference. Basically, the locker room of the training center was open, and we could talk to any player we wanted that were present. And the two players that received the individual trophy for the Impact this year, the internal trophies, you could say, the Giuseppe Saputo Outstanding Player of the Year goes to Nacho Piani for the fourth year consecutively. And you know, Joey Saputo made a joke saying, "Nacho, you win it one more time, we'll change the name of that trophy." So I thought that was interesting. And Evan Bush, Defensive Player of the Year, who is not in the finalists for Goalkeeper of the Year, but had one of the great season of a goalkeeper in the Montreal Impact's history.
Yeah, Goalkeeper of the Year is a weird one. I mean, Stefan Fry is the likely going to winner of that one in league-wide, but you're going to have to do a lot if you're the Montreal Impact goalkeeper to win Goalkeeper of the Year. You really are, and it's just the case of the way it is. It doesn't matter how well you play. The Goalkeeper of the Year is a funny award anyway. I don't know how you necessarily approach it or look at it, because it's a any keeper that's making a lot of saves is probably on a bad team, basically, is what it comes down to.
That's true.
Name escaping me right now. Salt Lake's keeper, help me.
Nick Raimondo.
Yeah, Raimondo, he never won it. That tells you everything. He's probably the best keeper in MLS history over his career. So don't worry about that award too much. But good for him. I know you're high on him. Let me ask you a couple questions, because you were there and the rest of us were not. So, Kevin, you mentioned a little bit of this and spoke to it. So speak to a little bit more what the overall attitude was, the overall feeling. Obviously, they're disappointed, but the sense around the room, was it hope for the future or was it disappointment in the past? Where did it more lean towards?
There was a lot of hope for the future, because the Montreal Impact season can be separated in two. The first 13 games with 3 wins only and no draws, 9 points in 13 games. And the next 21 games where they racked up 34 points. If you had 1 or 2 wins at the beginning of the season, Montreal Impact are a playoff team. So, and this feeling in the room was, yes, we're disappointed. We would have loved a better end to the story this year, but at least there was a lot of progression. And this group is the word that actually came out often was, we hope there's consistency going into next year. We hope there's continuity in the roster so we can continue to build from what we have built over the last 21 games. And Montreal has been the 5th best team in the entire league over the last 21 games. So that is, for me, an indication that continuity needs to be the case. Rémi Gallant will be the coach heading into next year. And Rémi Gallant made a great adjustment this year, getting to know his players, and that's the question I asked Samuel Piet in my French comments. I'm like, Samuel, you saw the coach at the beginning of the year, and you saw the progression. What changed between the 13 games and the 21 games? And he's like, the coach got to know his players, got to know his staff, got to know who he likes, how he wants to use certain players, and how he doesn't want to use any. Jackson Amell. So you kind of have the feeling that they do want continuity in this roster for next year. A few players are not coming back. Cal Fisher was waived apparently yesterday by the Montreal Impact, not coming back next year. There's a disagreement between the two where the club wanted maybe to loan him in USL for the next season and he didn't want to. He wants to find a job in Major League Soccer. And talking to Cal, he says, I do look beyond my soccer career too. I'm not saying it's now. I'm not saying I'm going to retire right away. I do believe I can play in Major League Soccer. And between you and I, he can. He has shown the talents that he can have when he's fully healthy. And he was actually healthier earlier this season, but the club and himself decided to go ahead and remove the screws and the metal plate from his injury to permit a better healing process, so that going forward, he would be in a better playing situation. So he's about 2 weeks away from being practice fit again. So he'll work with his agent to find an option to play next year somewhere in Major League Soccer or somewhere in the world. We'll see. He still has some work to do there. Evan Bush contract's up, and there has been negotiations between the Impact and Evan Bush. So we'll see if they can find an agreement term. It's maybe the first time in Evan Bush's career that he does have some leverage, but he's still not a free agent. And his entire career, it's always either a one-year contract or an option year where he doesn't have any control. And he has been with Montreal for 8 seasons, and he does appreciate the security that he does have, stability with his family in Montreal. He's expecting a newborn, a girl, in January. So congratulations, Evan Bush, on that. But we'll see if he comes back with the Impact, if the Impact wants to save money there and maybe sign another keeper. We'll see. A lot of questions. Another player who's not coming back, Dwayne, and I want to steer direction this way, Anthony Jackson-Amel, after a stellar 2017 season where he scored a lot of goals on a very few minutes of play, this year did not go according to his planning. Him and Rémi Garde never agreed on the playing time that Anthony Jackson-Amel. They didn't agree in how it should go down, how one was training, and the words Jackson-Amel used in French were, it's hard when you know you're not going to get any chance to give it your all the time. It's hard to work hard for a team and a management that doesn't necessarily believe in you. He was careful not to throw Rémi Garde and the management under the bus, but saying that they do have their fault in how they handled me. He said, I had my own fault how I handled myself this year, but the club has a lot of faults too. So he says it's not irreparable. The link between the two, the bridges hasn't blown up yet, but it's complicated, and it's a complicated relationship. He has a one-year contract left. I do have a feeling the Impact is going to find a way to either loan him out for next year, or to trade him, or to transfer him in another league, and maybe another country, maybe somewhere else. But I do have a feeling Anthony Jackson-Amel has played his last game for the Montreal Impact.
I have a hilarious trade option for you that will never happen, but probably would make sense if they were two different clubs. Jordan Hamilton straight up for Anthony Jackson-Amel. Maybe you give both a different look, and maybe they succeed elsewhere. But no, he certainly is going to get a look in the Canadian Premier League. If he doesn't get a look somewhere else in MLS, I would think that there would be interest in him in MLS. The only issue would be, do you know where he stands in terms of the homegrownness and that the new rule? Would he stand as a domestic for a U.S. team, or is he sort of restricted to Toronto or Vancouver if he wants to stay in MLS and be in Canada and not in Montreal?
I don't know, but one thing is, I believe so. We did talk to him about the USL, and he has no want in the USL, no parts of it. He wants no part of the USL. He believes he can play Major League Soccer or a top league in somewhere in the world. And I have a feeling the CPL will not be a league that suits his desires for next year. Not saying he cannot. He probably could be the best striker in that league if he wants to. But Anthony Jackson-Amel, being a player, the motivation needs to be a big key, big factor. I think we're going to see him somewhere in Ligue 2, to be quite honest. I don't think he can cut the League One right now. Maybe he can. We'll see. Or maybe somewhere else in Major League Soccer. But it's going to be a complicated offseason for him. The thing is, we were told that he wasn't going to show up even today. And he actually showed up. So props to Anthony Jackson-Amel for being here, answering people's questions. And you can listen to Anthony Jackson-Amel's comments in my French show. It's going to drop just about an hour after this show is over. I will have the full presser and full French comments from players I talked to, Samuel Piette. And you know, that's interesting thing about Samuel Piette. One of the only players where his season is actually not over, because he's going to play for Canada in Nations League. He's leaving on the 10th of November to join the team. And he's going to train with the U19 of the Montreal Impact until Saturday. And Saturday he's leaving to join the national team camp.
Yeah, Alfonso Davies is staying training. Obviously, he's going to Germany, but he's doing the same thing, going to the camp, which is happening sooner than we think. 2 weeks to that game, or the 15th, I guess. So it's about two and a bit weeks to the next Nations League qualifier. So that is good to see, and you know, that's hopefully not going to cut a bit of that offseason off. This is the problem in MLS. I mean, you don't have enough offseason if you go to the MLS final, but there's not enough teams go that deep, right? The only four teams going after the 15th of November, and it's too long of a stretch off for those guys. Other than that, we need to find a way, I don't know, less teams in playoffs, longer season. 38-game schedule, four teams in playoffs. There's your answer, but I don't think that will happen. Anthony Jackson-Amel is an interesting sort of question in the offseason. You know, I joke about the Jordan Hamilton comparisons. I do it all the time because I think in many ways they're similar players with similar talent levels. I wouldn't expect any player that's had success in Major League Soccer to openly say that they want to go to USL, or to openly say that they're willing to go to the Canadian Premier League. That will be a decision that happens to those guys in March, right? And before starting them. But it might be. Ligue 2 is an interesting option for him, obviously, as well. Does he? I don't know what the domestic rules are in France for him to go over there, whether that's easy or not for the passport stuff. But
there was discussion this year, though. Earlier this year, there was rumors that Auxerre and Ligue 2 wanted him, and we'll see if that ever happens. And that's where he stands right now. So for Anthony Jackson-Amel, without saying it overtly, like, yeah, he's on his way out of the Montreal Impact. And so is probably a few other players. The way Chris Duval, the way Quincy Amerikwa were talking, I have a feeling we won't see those players back again. And to be quite honest, we've talked about it. The Montreal Impact has one big, big need in the offseason in a striker. Because right now, the three strikers are probably on their way out. Matteo Mancoso, you know what Mancoso said today? Matteo Mancoso said his career is not his first priority anymore. What does that say? What does that mean? You made enough money this year that you don't need to play anymore? Probably the case.
That's something, for sure. Not what you really want to hear. Yeah, no, complete overhaul there, for sure. Amerikwa, a guy like that, I could imagine. Put yourself in his shoes. He was basically pulled from the other side of the continent to go to a place that he never likely imagined he'd be in.
But he actually played here, though. Right, so no, sorry to cut you off. I was just going to say, here he actually played compared to not playing in San Jose. So for him, as a second striker.
Yeah, a guy at this point in his career that would probably be willing to go someplace more comfortable for his family where he'd have more auxiliary opportunities to work. And we talked about this a lot. We haven't talked about it as much recently, but you think about their families around them, and if you get pulled into Canada, and especially into Quebec, it's really challenging for the families if they don't speak French in Quebec to get any work, and they also already have visa issues in terms of working. So they might actually make more money taking less money to play in the States because their spouse or partner can work. Right? It's a human thing that we got to consider when we're considering what these guys are going to do. So if you're an Impact fan, I wouldn't judge Amerikwa too harshly if he decides to take an opportunity that's closer to home, from more comfortable for the rest of his family. But certainly it's frustrating. But it's a frustration that the Impact front office has to address and is aware of, right? Which is why we talk about, how come they have not explored the French-speaking world more than they have leading up to this, because it isn't hard for those people. It's more natural for them, right? And they're starting to do that. So
this year they have Camacho, Fanny, Bakary Sagna, and Zakaria Diallo, which we barely saw. We didn't see today, barely. But you got a lot of a French speaker coming in now from Europe, and the Rémi Garde network of contacts will probably receive a few phone calls this offseason, say, hey, you saw the progress we did. How about you be part of this team? And I guess what you mentioned about Watson in Vancouver not being part of this, you want players fully dedicated to the cause coming in over, or coming into this project. And Rémi Garde did show this year that he knows where he's going now. It took him a few weeks to adjust to the league itself, which is understandable with the different type of travel, different type of thing. But tomorrow we'll know more. We'll talk to Rémi Garde tomorrow afternoon. So that's where I'm going tomorrow afternoon. And the one question I want to ask Rémi Garde is, what do you want your bench to look like? To have a bit more confidence in your bench next year to be able to fully utilize the 18 that you do put on the game sheet. And for example, Tony Jackson was not even on the 18 majority of the year. So people thought that he was injured. That's one thing he said too. He's like, people didn't know my situation. Journalists didn't talk about it enough. People thought I was injured for a long time. I was only injured for parts about 2-3 weeks, and then I was back in playing shape. But I was all the time in the stands, and people were thinking that I was injured. So no, Montreal Impact are going to have a few striker spot open for next year, because in my opinion, all three strikers that are here right now are on their way out.
Yeah, well, and I mean, maybe that's for the best. Sometimes, continuity is important, as you said, but that's a difficult word to say. But at the same time, sometimes if it's just not working, it's better to start fresh with a complete clean slate. And, you can come in and take all the money you were going to spend on three guys and maybe spend it on one game breaker if you want, or what have you. It's maybe if it's the best there. But the depth, I think, clearly would be their obvious focus moving the offseason in addition to the striker need. And yeah, it sounds like things are a little better off in Montreal than they are in Vancouver, though. And we said, Kevin's going to be at that press conference tomorrow, so we'll have more talk about that tomorrow, and we'll certainly be talking to Simon Fudge about the real footballers of Vancouver on Friday. Kevin, should we look at the games tonight quickly before we say goodbye for the day?
NYCFC versus Philadelphia tonight, 7 p.m. at Yankee Stadium. And FC Dallas versus Portland at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Those two games can be seen on your television if you are in Canada. It'll be interesting to see if NYCFC can pull off the same type of performance against Philly at Yankee Stadium and FC Dallas Portland. That's an interesting one, too, because FC Dallas is not necessarily that hot coming into the playoff. Same thing can be said for the Portland Timbers.
Exactly. TV Spot and TSN 1 and 4 in Canada, FS1 in the States for the first game, and the second game it's Unimas only. But these are teams. You look at particularly Dallas is an interesting one. Three straight losses heading into the playoffs. That does not bode well, particularly against Portland, who, prior to the loss in the final week of the season against Vancouver, had been on a two-game winning streak with a draw headed into that. None of these teams heading into tonight's are particularly hot. Union have lost two in a row. NYCFC, as we said, have been one of the worst teams in the league over the past 2 months. So a lot of interesting storylines here. A lot of history, playoff failure history, other than Portland. They're the only team with a sort of, you know, on all the way up or all the way down kind of history, as we well know. So these are, of the four first-round matches, the ones that are maybe the hardest to call, the coin flip matches in this. But if you want to listen to our playoff preview, certainly you can do that yesterday. You can also join Kevin, our playoff bracket. Kevin has tweeted that link out. I've retweeted a couple times. We have quite a few entries already. So if we get that over a certain number, maybe we could figure out something. I have a couple, some swag here that I could give away. But
same here.
A little bit higher.
Yeah, same here. I have like a Nacho Piatti and Montreal Impact team signed ball. I have a Pirlo signed ball that I've been trying to give away for a few times now and never an auction. You have to meet the reserve, right? If you don't meet the reserve price, it's not really worth it. But let's get this league a little higher. You got until tonight to make sure that you sign up to the league, enter the bracket challenge. Go to bracket.mlssoccer.com. As always, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, Dwayne the Outlaw of the soccer podcast world. And you can bang bang. And you can follow myself as well at Kev Larme. For today, I'm the sheriff of the soccer podcast world. And until tomorrow, have a safe Halloween and have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.